All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today's March 10th, 2026. And our top story, once again, is oil. And just what the hell did we see in markets yesterday? The price of oil over the last, say, 30 hours or so has gone as high as $120, as low as $80. And as of the making of this stream, about 90 bucks. Now, blink and you missed it. Oil has been all over the place. Go figure, the biggest geopolitical event in the Middle East in 20 years happening tends to cause a little bit of volatility. Now, look, forget the intraday swing that we saw yesterday. I mean, this market suffers from a wonderful combination of attention deficit disorder and way too much selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. You combine those two things, and these traders are just bouncing off the walls, all right? It's like kids with too much caffeine, or they drank too much Tweaks coffee from South Park. Whatever the hell, they're overreacting to every headline, to every True Social post, swinging prices all over the place. And look, guys, you don't have better access to information on the flow of the most important commodity in the world just because the guy who you tend to have more political agreements with on Twitter says a certain thing happened in the Middle East. Trust me, Trafigura and all those big international trading houses, they have better information than you do. So if you're out there going and levering up trying to bet on oil futures, you got your clock cleaned yesterday. Maybe there's a lesson to be learned from all that. That being said, wars are not over in 10 days, despite what we saw in Venezuela and, you know, generations that grew up watching the CNN wars of the 1990s. It just doesn't work that way. And people are like, oh, my God, it's been another 12 hours and the war's not over yet. This just shows that this war is going to go on forever. No, it's been 10 days. Calm the hell down. We don't know what's going to happen. I can tell you that the flow of information from the OSINT channels, the open source intel channels, has ground to a crawl, just barely. Maybe those guys are tired because they've been running ragged for 10 days and that's why they're posting a lot less. Or maybe there are fewer missiles crisscrossing over the Gulf right now. It's hard to tell, but both could be true. That being said, here's where we're at after so many days of this conflict. The price of oil sitting around 90 bucks, 6% of global oil production has now been cut. That's according to Bloomberg this morning. Now, this is production cuts, mind you. That doesn't mean what's getting in or not getting in and through the Strait of Hormuz. This is actual oil coming out of the ground and being put into either ships or tanks, down by 6%. That's about 6.7 million barrels per day of crude production, largely from Saudi Arabia, Iraq, the UAE, and Kuwait. So some of this oil is being routed through pipelines heading west towards the Red Sea, where hopefully the Houthis don't get involved. Some of this oil is running the Strait of Hormuz. We don't really know how much. Ship transponder data is all over the place. I mean, people were posting yesterday these clusters of ships, some of them doing 100 knots. No, they don't go that fast. There's electronic warfare going on over the Gulf. Ships are flipping their transponders on and off. Some are trying to run the blockade. Some are not. It's really hard to tell how much oil is getting out of the strait right now. But at least some is, and some is escaping to the west. It's just really hard to know how much actual disruption is going on. And so, again, just be careful trying to trade these futures markets right now, guys. You're going to get destroyed. Now, we've also got G7 ministers are jawboning once again. Yesterday morning, we talked about how the price of oil had crashed almost 20 bucks when the G7 came out and said, oh, we're going to dump our oil reserves into the open market to try to relieve prices. And prices crashed. And then, you know, around 10 a.m. yesterday, Eastern time, the G7 said, no, we don't have a deal. We're not going to do that. But it didn't matter. The price of oil kept falling all day yesterday. Well, this morning, they're saying the G7 ministers are going to meet again to discuss dumping oil reserves. Get used to that. They're going to meet probably on a daily basis. They're going to keep that threat of dumping reserves hanging over oil markets like a sword of Damocles, just in case traders decide they want to lever up to the long side and spike the price of oil. They reserve the right to clean you out. That's what the G7 ministers are doing with these daily announcements of meetings. Now, even as all this disruption is going on, we've got to talk about the knock-on effects because we're starting to see second and third order effects of this disruption in the Middle East, and it's mainly hitting in Southeast Asia. We've got India has prioritized LPG, or liquefied petroleum gas, fuel for houses. So we've got things like restaurants are shutting down because they can't get LPG gas. It's going just to home so they can cook in the kitchen. Crematoriums are shutting down. I mean, talk about a 2020s bingo announcement if I ever heard one. Who had dead bodies piling up in India because of a fuel shortage on their 2020s bingo card? Good God. Bangladesh also having problems there. They are prioritizing diesel fuel for vehicles instead of filling containers, which means Bangladeshi garment factories are having to shut down because apparently the power grid in Bangladesh is so unreliable that for up to 6 hours a day, they end up running on their backup generators. 6 hours a day, is it really the backup if you run it on it? Anyway, so garment factories, they're shutting down because of diesel shortages in Bangladesh. We've also got stories about Southeast Asian countries, in particular Indonesia, are having to halt biodiesel production, mainly because of a methanol shortage. Methanol is produced in Qatar, where the LNG plants are. They've been disrupted because of what's going on in the Strait of Hormuz. And methanol is used to break down palm oil in order to convert it into biodiesel, so you have less biodiesel production going on. These are these second-order effects, right? Not just, okay, we're short on fuel. Now what happens when we're short on fuel? What else do we have to curtail? And then what does that result in? Over the next few weeks, assuming this conflict continues, and I see no reason to believe that this conflict is not going to continue, over the next few weeks, we're going to have this steady stream of these knock-on effects. Now, we've also got some AI bubble news this morning. Amazon is borrowing billions of dollars in a multi-tranche bond offering. Bonds with durations as much as 2 to 50 years in order to fund their data center buildout. So that's great. Amazon is borrowing billions of dollars for 50 years to buy GPUs that will last for 5, maybe 6 years. And then they get to keep paying for them over the next 45 years. And these are companies that have already exhausted their ridiculously high cash flow, but they all announced big CapEx increases, much to the chagrin of their investors, and their stock has fallen. And now they're taking on more debt. Big tech will continue to pay the price for the capital destruction going on in this bubble for years and possibly even decades to come. And it's not just Amazon now. We've got AT&T is a big spender this morning. $250 billion AT&T is going to spend over the next 5 years to upgrade internet infrastructure in the U.S. And you better believe data centers is playing a role in that as well. Going to be laying lots of fiber cable. It looks a lot like the dot-com bubble all over again, doesn't it? We've also got earnings from Volkswagen this morning. Their profits were cut in half last year, thanks in no small part to tariffs. Also, keep in mind the tariffs that were put on cars were under Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act, not under IEEPA, so the tariffs on cars were not struck down by the Supreme Court. Those aren't going anywhere, taking a big chunk out of Volkswagen this morning. Kohl's earnings, their sales were down 4%. Their comps were down 2.8%. That's a mall stock. No big surprises there. The meme trader's probably not too happy with that one. And wrapping up the show, stick around to the end. We talked about German pension funds and this German dentist pension fund that took big losses a couple of weeks ago because of commercial real estate in the United States. Well, now it's the German lawyers pension fund is taking big losses, tens of millions of dollars wiped out in its entirety because of a bad investment in commercial real estate in the U.S. in the Transamerica Pyramid, a single project. Guys, the pension bomb, we're watching it go in real time. If it's not private credit, it's commercial real estate or maybe even private equity. Pick your poison. Today, it's CRE. But in the meantime, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button. And today is your last day to get your tickets for George Noble's Best Stock Ideas Summit, which is tomorrow, where yours truly will be presenting along with a host of other investors. Check out the link down below to that one. And right now, the S&P 500 is lower by 12 points or 0.18% in the red, just off its lows. Most of those losses coming in the last couple of hours here since about 5 a.m., where President Trump said the war in Iran will end very soon. The Iranians may get a vote. The Dow is also down 80 points or about 0.18% lower. And the NASDAQ is off by just 16 points or 0.06% lower. Guys, stocks have been all over the place the last couple of days. I mean, we've seen this. They open lower, they head lower, the dip buyers show up at lunch, and then they close either modestly positive or down 100 points or so. Maybe today's going to be like that again, although today things are a lot more calm than they've been for the last couple of trading sessions. The dollar is a little bit weaker this morning at 98.66, off by 7 basis points. And looking at the bond market, very little movement here. We've got the 30-year yield is lower by about a point and a half at 4.754%. The 10-year yield at 4.117, off by almost 2 basis points. The 2-year yield is at 3.557. That's down by 3.5 points. And the 1-month is barely moving at 3.698, down by a fraction of 1 point. Bitcoin having another good day here. The last 2 days, Bitcoin has really ripped, now $70,700, up by about $2,000 from yesterday. I don't know why traders are risk on all of a sudden in Bitcoin markets. It really doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense to me. The only thing I could think of was that people are trying to get out of Dubai, which is a big crypto hub, by the way, a big center for global wealth, especially global wealth among people who don't want too many questions asked. And those people are looking at GTFO right now of Dubai, and the easiest way to take your money with you is to put it into Bitcoin. So that's the only thing I could think of why Bitcoin has traded so well since the start of this war. Looking over at the commodities board this morning, we've got some green in metals. Spot gold back above $5,200, up $62, or 1.22% higher. Meanwhile, April COMEX gold futures are at $5,209. That's higher by $105, or 2.07% higher. Spot silver is at $89.25. Silver had a great day yesterday. We're back above, or we were briefly back above $90. We're just off those highs now, but $2.32 higher, or 2.67% higher. May COMEX silver futures are at $89.53. That's higher by $5, or 5.9%. That's about all I want for today. I don't want the volatility coming back. I don't want the big giant candles, whether green or red. Give me my 2.5%, 5%. I'm happy with that. Take the rest of the day off. Leave silver at 89. Tomorrow, let's talk about the low 90s. All right, just please, a return to normal in metals, if you will. Either way, guys, I like the shiny. Copper is higher by 0.86%. Platinum up 2.6%. Palladium is higher by 1%, and oil is in the red here, down $6.25 at $88.52 for April WTI crude. May Brent crude oil futures are at $91.81, down by $7 and change, or 7.25%. Let's also check in on natural gas, down 2.2%, and gasoline RBOB futures lower by 4%. So fuel is lower across the board here. Let's take a look at some of those charts. And guys, somebody want to tell me just what in the hell we're looking at here? Look at this candle from yesterday in crude oil. That is just nutty. We have got a high of $119.48 and a low of $81.19, a nearly $40 intraday trading range for crude oil yesterday. All right. I don't know what the hell that was. All right. That's just short attention spans, way too much pharmaceuticals involved in the people trading futures here. If that doesn't give you pause, I don't know what does. But oil right now, back, you know, mid 80s, high 80s, below 90, still higher than where we were a couple of days ago. Still sharply higher than when the conflict began. We were about $67 here, so we're up about $22, or about 34-35% from where we started. Just be careful sticking your neck out on leverage, guys. I mean, if you thought you were smarter than everybody else and you piled into a levered oil ETF yesterday, you got destroyed on that trade. Same thing with natural gas here. Volatility all over the place. We had this big jump up yesterday, sold off on that. Now a big gap down this morning. It's almost hard to keep track on these charts, but right now, natural gas, this is Dutch TTF futures. This is Europe's big natural gas, up lower by 14% this morning at 48.5 euros per megawatt hour. Pretty much right back to where we opened, not opened, back to the highs of the first day of this conflict. So energy markets were in full-blown panic this time yesterday morning. Today, energy markets are like, this conflict is going to be over in a few days. I don't believe either one, all right? It's all over the place. Just don't draw too many conclusions from this. All right, so let's talk about the capacity and the production cuts that are going on this morning. We've got Gulf oil giants deep in cuts as Hormuz halt chokes exports. Oil supply cuts in the Middle East are deepening, shaving about 6% off global output as the effective closure of the Strait of Hormuz piles more pressure on producers with every day the Iran war goes on. Production cuts are rippling across the Gulf, even as Saudi Arabia and the UAE ramp up exports through alternative routes to bypass Hormuz, with Saudi shipments through the Red Sea reaching a record this week. However, storage facilities are still filling up across the region, and some producers are also preemptively curtailing output to delay the point at which they'd be forced to stop completely, according to a person familiar with the matter. Saudi Arabia, Iraq, the UAE, and Kuwait have lowered their collective output by as much as 6.7 million barrels per day, people with knowledge of the matter said, asking not to be identified. The cutbacks are the most tangible supply response yet since the war started. It means they've reduced their collective production by as much as a third. Beyond oil field output, the war has shuttered refineries, halted production at Qatar's liquefied natural gas plant, the world's largest, and driven a surge in global fuel prices and oil transport costs. The chaos and shutdowns drove oil towards $120 a barrel on Monday, though prices tumbled back down again after Trump's comments on the possibility the war will end soon. Brent futures slumped a further 7% to $92 a barrel on Tuesday morning in London. Saudi Arabia has lowered output by 2 million to 2.5 million barrels a day. The UAE cut output by 500 to 800,000 barrels a day, Kuwait by about 500,000 a day, and Iraq by about 2.9 billion barrels per day. And again, this is just production. This is not shipments, because in a lot of cases, there's nowhere for that production to go. They're getting some of it out through pipelines to the West, but they're still filling those tanks. Meanwhile, G7 energy ministers to discuss oil price stability on Tuesday, according to Dombrovskis. I don't know who Dombrovskis is. Energy ministers of the group of seven countries will discuss on Tuesday the possibility of coordinated action to cushion the impact of the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. On oil prices, the European Economic Commissioner Valdis Dombrovskis said. All right, so we're going to see this over and over again, guys. There's this EU commissioner guy. They tried to jawbone markets lower yesterday. They said, we're going to dump our oil reserves. It worked, even though they decided not to do that. And then this morning, they're saying, oh, we're going to meet again. We're going to discuss dumping the reserves. Right now, it appears to be working. Will they do it or won't they? They're probably going to say this over and over again as a way to try to manage this increase in oil prices. It's going to have its volatility. It's going to spike up. It's going to drop down. But it's probably going to continue to grind higher as long as this conflict goes on. And despite some of the comments, I really have no reason to believe this conflict is going to end anytime soon, other than the fact that Trump might taco on higher oil prices, or maybe the decline in the flow of news out of the Middle East, the reduction in the missile salvos and the volume of drones being fired, maybe that reduction does mean the war is coming to an end. I just think it's way too early to tell. And as always, there's just way too much fake BS information that is flowing around on the internet to make any conclusions based on that. Everybody's just latching on to whatever suits their pre-existing disposition or a political affiliation, and they're running with that as if it's the unvarnished truth. The only truth is there's just way too much bullshit to know what's really happening on the ground. Meanwhile, we've got ship clusters and speeding tankers point to Hormuz jamming. This is why it's hard to go off your shipping data right now. At least a dozen ship clusters have appeared near the Strait of Hormuz, a likely sign of electronic interference around the waterway through which most transit has halted with the U.S. in the Israeli war on Iran. The groups, which can number more than 200 vessels for some clusters, contain ships of all types, with some that appear to be traveling at more than 100 knots, according to tracking data. Boy, these guys are in a hurry, and wow, those are some fast tankers. No, the ships are not doing 100 knots, guys. There's not 200 vessels in a clump doing 100 knots. They didn't form some kind of shipping Voltron by your powers combined that suddenly they're able to transit the Strait of Hormuz. This is spoofing. They're faking the GPS data. Trying to tell where any vessel is with tracking data is all but impossible, according to Mark Douglas, an analyst at Starboard Maritime Intelligence. Over the past 48 hours, the situation has become impenetrable, he says. There's electronic warfare going on. We've got E-18 growlers up over the Gulf that are just flooding the airwaves with all kinds of electronic noise. You've got ships turning their transponders on and off. maybe even sending fake position data so they don't get hit with missiles. It's really hard to know what, if anything, is getting through the strait. Although based on the information I've seen from some credible sources, it looks like at least some boats are running the strait. Good luck to you if you're doing that. Some are getting hit, some are getting through, and we just don't know how much. Again, there's just a lot of fake information out there. But let's talk about the knock-on effect, shall we? Because we are seeing this spread to other industries, not just energy. India prioritizes households as it redirects LPG from refiners. India has invoked emergency powers to redirect supplies of liquefied petroleum gas away from industrial users to households as it seeks to shield ordinary people from the impact of the Middle East war. An oil ministry notification on Tuesday barred refiners, including Reliance Industries export-oriented unit and petrochemical plants, from using the fuel as a feedstock while also ordering them to maximize LPG output. That was an expansion of a previous measure targeting other processors. LPG cylinders are still found in most Indian kitchens, and industries use the fuel as feedstock for plastic production. Households accounted for roughly 86% of India's LPG consumption in the 10 months through January, according to oil ministry data. The government raised cooking gas prices on Saturday for the first time in a year and extended the minimum interval between subsidized refills from 25 from 21 days to modulate demand. So you can see here the government is really got their fingers on the scale. They're messing with the demand and the supply of fuels. First of all, they're mandating demand destruction by forcing factories to stop producing LPG derivatives or stop sending the LPG to petrochemical plants. They're raising their rigged prices or their fixed prices, so they've got price controls in place. And they are also increasing the minimum interval between refills. So, you know, the government is heavily involved here. There's no free market signals whatsoever reaching this LPG market. However, when you have price controls, you end up with shortages every time. And the shortages are already showing up on the ground. Restaurants in parts of the country have halted operations, while a crematorium in the western state of Maharashtra curtailed LPG-based incinerations due to fuel shortage. That's dark. All right, the crematoriums cannot burn bodies because there's no fuel because of war in the Middle East. That is a very 2020s thing to say. We also have stories like this in Bangladesh, where they secure diesel supplies amid major energy disruptions, sources say. And every time they're like shutting something down or they're telling somebody they don't have fuel, they always lead with, oh, we have secured supplies. Let's start with the good news before we tell people they get no gas. Bangladesh has begun receiving diesel from suppliers, including China and India, with officials saying the country now has enough fuel to cover about 1 month of demand, with arrangements underway for another month after the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran disrupted shipments, including to the massive garments industry. The South Asian nation of 175 million people, which relies on imports for roughly 95% of its energy needs, has imposed fuel rationing for vehicles, restrictions on diesel sales, and closed universities as the war on Iran caused severe disruption to Middle East oil exports. Some garment makers in Bangladesh, the world's second largest clothing exporter after China, have already complained they do not have enough diesel to run their backup generators when public utilities cut power supplies. Mahmoud Hassan Khan, president of the Bangladesh Garment Manufacturer and Exporters Association, said power cuts had doubled to up to 5 hours a day since the war began in February 28th. Well, I had no idea the power grid in Bangladesh was so unreliable. 5 hours a day. How do you run a business when the power could go out for 5 hours a day and you can't get diesel for your backup generator? When power goes out, we have to run our standby generators on diesel, but we can't buy enough diesel anymore, and it's causing problems for us. All right, so we've got crematoriums in India, garment factories and colleges in Bangladesh, and we're also hitting biodiesel markets. Iran war's energy shock is spreading to crop-based fuels. Another corner of the energy market is being threatened by the war in Iran as prices for methanol, essential to biofuel production, surge in Southeast Asia. The spike risks crimping output of crop-based fuels and adding to the region's energy crunch. Indonesia is the world's biggest producer of palm oil, a large portion of which is converted into biodiesel to meet the country's steep blending targets. Methanol is key to that process, helping to break down the crop and convert it into fuel. However, prices for the alcohol have climbed as ship traffic grinds to a halt amid the U.S.-Israeli attacks in Iran. Methanol prices for delivery to the south to Southeast Asia have jumped 24% last week to $402 a ton. That's the biggest gain since 2007. Data from analytics firm Polymer Update shows. If the disruption continues, inventories in Indonesia could run low and biofuel production may fall short of the government's monthly quotas as soon as April, according to traders familiar with the matter who asked not to be identified. So you can see it's not just about oil. It's not just about gasoline. You've got biofuel. You've got petrochemicals, garment factories, crematoriums, universities, knock-on effects happening. And it's hitting Southeast Asia first and hardest because that's where most of that Middle East fuel goes. All right, on to the AI bubble. We've got Amazon returns to the debt market with a jumbo cross-border bond sale. Big tech taking on big debt to pay for their big bet on AI that is not paying off. Amazon is returning to the bond market with a jumbo cross-border offering, adding to a borrowing spree among companies spearheading the AI boom. The firm is selling U.S. high-grade bonds in as many as 11 tranches, ranging from 2 to 50 years, according to a person with knowledge of the matter. Initial price discussions for the longest portion of the deal, a note maturing in 2076, are a premium of about 1.5 percentage points above U.S. Treasuries, the person added, asking not to be identified, discussing private details. Who in their right mind is buying a 50-year bond that's going to pay 1.5% above U.S. Treasuries from Amazon in order to pay for a data center that's going to last for 5 years? Who in their right mind is buying this garbage? The firm also plans to sell euro bonds in 8 parts with maturities of up to 38 years. The echoes and reverberations of this bubble will probably outlive us, guys. That is how long this debt is dated. What the hell are they thinking? It's the latest in a series of jumbo bond sales by hyperscalers as they plan to invest hundreds of billions of dollars in AI infrastructure. Investors so far have been eager buyers, placing orders several times the size of recent offerings. Last month alone, Alphabet raised $32 billion in the U.S. and Europe in high-grade bond markets. Oracle borrowed another $25 billion in the U.S. Amazon last tapped the market in November when it sold $15 billion of bonds. Amazon's offering comes at a time when equity investors grow more worried that the company's massive spending in AI may not pay off. The firm last month said it would invest about $200 billion in data centers, chips, and other equipment in 2026, beating analyst estimates. And, well, investors didn't like that news, at least not when they released their earnings. Right now, Amazon stock is up a fraction of a percent, $214. Barely moving on this news. Year to date, the stock is down 7.5%, much of that coming immediately following that last earnings release. When they announced that big jump in CapEx, investors did not like that one, not a bit. But they are going ahead with it, borrowing more money. And AT&T is spending big as well this morning. AT&T outlines $250 billion U.S. investment plan to boost infrastructure in the AI age. That is a lot of money, $250 billion from AT&T. And keep in mind, this company is not a fraction of the size of these big tech hyperscalers. AT&T will spend more than $250 billion over 5 years in the U.S. to expand its network infrastructure and will hire thousands of technicians this year, it said on Tuesday, as telcos ramp up investments to support surging data demand. Rapid adoption of AI, cloud computing, and connected devices has prompted telecom operators to invest heavily in fiber and 5G networks as they also seek to fend off intensifying competition from cable and broadband providers. The spending push comes alongside federal broadband initiatives created under the 2021 infrastructure law, including the $42.5 billion Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program. So at least some of the money that AT&T is spending is coming from this several-year-old government initiative that was passed under Biden. AT&T is spending big this morning. That stock, again, barely moving, $27.58 for AT&T, up a nickel or 0.15%. Year-to-date, AT&T is up about 10%, and over the last year, it's pretty much unchanged here, up 1.5%. We also got some earnings this morning. We got Volkswagen flags a tough year ahead as 2025 profit halves on tariffs and China competition. Germany's Volkswagen on Tuesday reported a sharp drop in annual operating profit and flagged another tough year ahead as the auto giant continues to grapple with U.S. tariffs and competition in China. Europe's biggest car maker posted 2025 operating profit of 8.9 billion euros. It's about $10.4 billion, down 53% from the year prior, citing U.S. tariffs, currency effects, and the strategic shift at Porsche. Wow, their earnings got cut in half. Rough year for Volkswagen. Analysts had expected annual operating profit to come in at 9.4 billion euros, so it was a little better than the worst case estimates. Full year revenue held steady at nearly 322 billion euros compared to 324.7 in 2024. And the company's outlook for sales growth is relatively modest in 2026. Volkswagen said it expects revenue to develop in a range of flat to up 3% this year, falling short of analysts' expectations. Tough time for the auto industry, even tougher time for the European auto industry. Although Volkswagen is doing all right here, up 2.4% today. Year to date, though, down 13.1%, and over the last year, down 19%. It's been a tough year for the car market. And also, sticking with cars for just a second, this is noteworthy this morning. Nissan replaces their CFO as the car maker struggles with a turnaround. Now, the CFO is supposedly leaving for personal reasons. The thing is, this CFO has only been on the job for a little more than 1 year, and he's out come April. Nissan has had a lot of trouble. They've been trying to sell themselves. They've been unable to do so. This is now going to be their third CFO in 2 years. Not a good sign. I would not be surprised to see more bad news from Nissan just based on this headline today. And we also got earnings from Kohl's. Stock tumbles after earnings. The meme stock buzz is over. Kohl's is dead money here, guys. This is a mall stock. I mean, even the Kohl's out by me, they just closed within the last year or so. It's a big anchor location at a dead mall that's sitting vacant. Kohl's stock fell sharply Tuesday after the retailer reported a larger than expected decline in sales for its fiscal fourth quarter. The company posted adjusted earnings of $1.07 a share for the quarter ended January 31st. That was above analyst estimates, 86 cents a share. Net sales totaled $4.97 billion, down 3.9% from the prior year and below Wall Street's call for $5.02 billion. So it was an adjusted earnings beat, emphasis on the adjusted. Their net sales down sharply from a year ago. Also, their comps, comparable sales decreased 2.8%. The market was expecting a 1.5% drop. So Kohl's stock having a bad morning, although no, Kohl's stock now having a good morning. It was down 8% initially on this news. Now it's up 1.5%. Although the stock is down 27.5% year to date, so some of that negativity may have already been factored in. Maybe you got some short covering going on this morning. And over the last year, Kohl's stock is up 21%, largely because this one became the target of a short squeeze. Long term, though, guys, stocks like this are just dead money. The mall is dead, and names like Kohl's, Bed Bath & Beyond. What are some of the other ones? I don't know. There's plenty of them. I don't shop much, but. Yeah, not touching this one, not with a 10-foot pole. Although, hey, it looks relatively cheap at 8.5 times PE, but again, that E is heavily adjusted. All right, last but not least, we've got this one from the Junk Bond Investor. By the way, this at Junk Bond Invest, this guy is excellent on X. I don't know who he is. It's an anonymous account, but he's very good on some of the private credit stuff. He says, first it was dentists, now it's the lawyers. German pension fund for lawyers writing off its entire investment in the Transamerica pyramid. The San Francisco trophy office, the preferred equity, full loss. German pension funds plus alternative investments equals money going up in smoke. I ad-libbed that last part. An ongoing tragedy. And they're talking here about how this German pension fund, this is a lawyer's pension fund now, not to be confused with the dentist pension fund that took a total loss on CRE a few months ago. Or weeks ago, a German pension fund invested 57.9 million euros in the Transamerica pyramid building. They expect to write off the entire amount following the sale. That building was sold to Yoda PLC for $700 million after the owner spent years refurbishing the property and citing a $1 billion investment. The pension fund's write-down will be booked in the accounts for 2025 and won't affect planned increases in benefits for pensions and entitlements. Take another look at that last sentence here. They're taking a almost 60 billion euro loss, but don't worry, it's not going to interfere with our planned increase in benefits and entitlements. So liabilities are going up, assets are going down. I'm sure that is just great news for pension funds in Germany. Again, whether it's private equity, private credit, or commercial real estate, the pensions are always the dumping ground for this toxic sludge, because that's where Wall Street loves to park their losses, because the people managing that money, it's not their money. They don't care. You grease the right wheels, you can get them to buy anything. And I just want to say thank you very much to the Nacho Man. Thank you, Nacho. He says, first, Travis, be here soon. All right, Nacho Man, calling out Travis for the first Super Chat of the day. Thank you, Nacho Man, for being quick on the draw and supporting the channel. Jolly Lollipop One says, Mr. Market thinks Trump will taco, thus lower oil. That's one possible way to interpret it, and I'm not disagreeing with you. It very much could be. The other interpretation is, when Trump said the war will be over soon, they think Iran is losing. I honestly really don't know which is which. I mean, Iran is certainly not winning, at least not the battles. That's pretty obvious. But what Iran is doing is inflicting economic harm on the world. That's their strategy. And we just got done 30 minutes of economic harm being inflicted on the world. Indonesia, Bangladesh, India. So, Iran's strategy, they're having a good effect on target. The U.S. strategy, we are having a good effect on target, blowing up their missile launchers. The volume of missile fire is down. I do not know which one of these strategies is working best. I really don't know. I'm an American. I live in the States. I want our side to win, so sue me. If you're rooting against your own country, maybe probably time to sit there and reevaluate your outlook on life. But that being said, I do acknowledge that there's so much BS information out there, and that this market is just wacky and bipolar, and I'm trying not to draw too many signals from what I see the oil market doing. I mean, if you go on what the oil market told us on Monday after the war started, oil was up like $3 on that first day. The market was trying to tell us that this was going to be over in a couple of days. That never sat right with me. Of course it wasn't going to be over in a couple of days. And now here we are, what, $40 higher, $30 higher, and the market's like, maybe it'll be over in a couple of weeks. So I try not to draw too much from the signals that the oil market has given us in the short term here. But taco is one possibility. I mean, if there's one thing, like, look at what happened on April 9th of last year following Liberation Day. The bond market threw a fit, and President Trump ultimately acquiesced and gave the bond market what it wanted. It gave it the big taco, which is where the term taco came from. The bond market has been quiet since this war broke out. So maybe that's the signal that you really want to watch. Stop looking at intraday moves in oil and look more on what that 10-year yield is doing, which right now is a whole bunch of nothing. So the bond market hasn't yet freaked out. That's probably the signal you really want to look for. Thank you, Lollipop, for supporting the channel. Thank you, Nacho Man, for gifting 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships, sir. I appreciate that very much. If you are the recipient of one of those Melon memberships, be sure and say thank you to Nacho Man. And just a reminder, guys, you get a free super chat with that membership. So use that, and I will read and respond to your questions, thoughts, comments, concerns live on the air. Thanks again, Nacho, for everything you do for the channel. Madison Hypes has been a Melonhead for 17 months, and she's, oh, we've got the tinfoil on. All right, let's see. USA is fighting World War III now before 2027. I agree 100% with that sentiment, Madison. I think what's happening in Iran and what's happening in Venezuela is 100% about controlling the flow of oil before China gets froggy in the South China Sea. Abso-freaking-lutely. The goal, in my opinion, best case scenario, would be the U.S. procures or otherwise obtains the ability to shut off the flow of oil to China while maintaining the flow of oil to everybody else in the world. That is basically, I mean, with the exception of military power, that is as powerful as you get. And if you get Iran off the board and Iran's ability to shut down the Strait of Hormuz off the board, then yes, the U.S. through its Navy can control the flow of oil into China, and Iran would not be able to shut off the flow of oil to everybody else in retaliation for that to support their ally, the Chinese. I 100% agree that Venezuela, Iran, and to a lesser or to an equal extent, Ukraine. These are battles in World War III that started in 2022. I wholeheartedly agree with that. It sucks. I'm not happy about that, but I can look at what's happening and say, yeah, that's what it is. Energy is a weapon in World War III. And all I can say, guys, is there's still time to switch it off. There's still time. I mean, yeah, people are dying, missiles are flying, but you know, it's not on every continent yet. Only like three of them. Not that many continents left. Yeah, but I agree, Madison. Thank you for supporting the channel. Lone Star 8 says, oh, thank you for being a Melonhead for 24 months. He says, hit that like button. According to a person familiar with the matter who asked not to be identified, speaking on condition of anonymity. Thank you very much, Lone Star. I am Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. Did I get that right? Yeah, Lone Star Street. Lone Star Straight. Thank you, sir. Pasta Man, what's going on, brother? He says, Amazon AI bonds purchased by German dentists. All right. I like the tie-in that you did there. Yep. German dentist. What do you call the German dentist funding? I don't know, like the Wirtschaftsbundesdienst. Yeah, that's who bought the Amazon 50-year AI bonds to pay for a five-year long data center. But don't worry, you know, you can always go ahead and seize that collateral, you know, 48 years from now if they stop paying. You could just go ahead and take those 48-year-old GPUs back, and good luck to you. I made that part up. They're not collateralized by GPUs. That's the CoreWeave thing. It's not quite that bad, at least not yet. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. EJ Walsh says, 50-year loans and bonds, buy, borrow, die economy. Yeah, it is kind of depressing that these AI bonds are probably going to outlive me. Not probably, they're going to. yikes. So, yeah, our kids, our grandkids will, assuming they hold shares in Amazon, congratulations, your grandchildren will be paying off the debt from the AI bubble. Who said these companies suffer from a lack of vision? Yeah, you know, they're loading up future generations. They take their signals directly from the government. Good God, this bubble cannot burst soon enough, EJ. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget the like button and that subscribe button. And it's your last day to get the tickets to George Noble's Best Stock Ideas Summit, where yours truly will be presenting tomorrow. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Those links, by the way, are right above the ones to YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee memberships. Thank you, everybody, all you magnanimous melons, for supporting the channel, as well as with the super chats this morning. Appreciate the generosity. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small, dream big.